All right, good morning again. As expected, we'll look at the book of Proverbs today. Next would be Ecclesiastes. I don't plan to do a lesson on Ecclesiastes since we're studying that on Wednesdays. I feel that Paul Kelsey is doing a perfectly adequate job covering that book, and wouldn't be anything wrong with doing a lesson on it also, but I don't see the need for that. Anyway, so for now we're going to look at the book of Proverbs. I probably could have just left this as on the timeline. It's just putting it right there around the time of Solomon, which is just after David. There's some hints of things being collected in the time of Hezekiah, which is why I put a second arrow on the timeline. But as far as authorship and whatnot, it's Solomon and the time there just after David. But it's pretty timeless, you know, so not really meaning to make a pun, but actually saying that on purpose, is that it doesn't really confine itself to a particular place and time. So so for a summary, it really is pretty straightforward. I'm sure there's things I'm missing, but there's always more depth to know, but I think it's pretty safe to say that this is a book about wisdom. What is maybe a little lesser known is that when we say proverbs, even if someone in the world talks about a proverb, I mean, you've heard of Chinese proverbs and things like that, you know, things outside the Bible. A proverb is just like a short saying of wisdom, like a sentence or so. It's not the entire book of Proverbs is Proverbs, really, in that form of quick one-sentence things. There's actually some long sections, especially the first 9 chapters, that are more poetic and long meditations on the same topic kind of thing. We'll talk a little more about that in a later slide, but just know it's not only those short little sayings, but it's still wisdom is the theme, regardless. So why is it special? You know, what makes it unique in the Bible? And I would say it's because it's so direct. So if you probably noticed or felt that poems especially really make you work for the meaning, even the stories, you might understand the basic idea of the story and what's going on, although even that, the names can be a lot to keep track of. And then you get to the end, you're like, okay, what's the application of this story? And you've got to kind of work through that. But the Proverbs are really just like, here's what you need to know. I guess the third category, other Bible prose, so like the letters of the New Testament and Jesus' sermons, are more direct, but even then can still take a little bit of work to understand. But yeah, the Proverbs just say, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad. And so that is unique. It's why it tends to be a little more popular among Bible books. Can you just get to the point, right? But the other books aren't flawed because they don't get to the point faster. It's just they're wanting you to work a little harder and meditate on things. So, all right, so I'm saying main characters. We'll kind of go with that. So you've got Solomon, who's mentioned a few times as the author. The story we'll cover later is that story where he gets his wisdom in 1 Kings 3. And so isn't it interesting that he's wise and he's written a book about wisdom, right? It's probably not a coincidence. There's a general idea through the book, especially the beginning, where it sounds like a father speaking to a son. We don't have to nail down exactly who is who. I mean, obviously if the author is Solomon, it seems he might be speaking to his son, but really it's just, you know, I think because it's generic, you get, you know, that sense that, you can apply that as any sort of fatherly advice, through the book. And then, so that's sort of a male dynamic going on. There's some female dynamics going on, which is, lady wisdom, is how it's often described. At the end, we'll read chapter 8 and Proverbs 8, you know, I'll just read verse 1 here. Doth not wisdom cry and understanding put forth her voice? And then it says she a few times. So wisdom is kind of your big word personified as a woman throughout, you know, at certain points in the book. And so that's, it becomes a character, I would say, in the book. It's very much a speaking role there. And then the other side is the woman that you shouldn't be hanging out with, and this is one that would tempt a young man to sin. to go back to what we were talking about earlier, you've got poems, the first 9 chapters. So again, just thinking, you know, it's not short phrases, but longer sections on the same topic. And I think you get a lot of those relationship sort of, wisdom being passed on, things going on there. The big middle of the book is chapters 10 through 29, and that's the Proverbs. That's the short sayings. Very rarely more than 2 verses in a row are on the same topic. What I saw, I don't know, how to confirm this except to spend hours and days researching this, but something like only 14 sections actually spend more than 2 verses in a row on the same idea. Excuse me. And then it goes back to some poems again. So, these are the only 2 other, authors I think that we know of in the book. Chapter 30 is the words of Agur, however you say that. And then chapter 31, it's famous because, you know, it's got that section about the virtuous woman. But that's not the only thing in the chapter. There's actually 9 verses at the beginning but all of it, seems to belong to the words of King Lemuel, that his mother taught him. So that's kind of neat. And that's a little bit of a change from the father-son, thing going on there. And then he talks about this great woman. So, bit of a change in tone compared to the rest, right? So having said all that, you know, it's not just life hacks in the book of Proverbs and just good advice. It is good advice, but it's not only that. You know, you see those pieces of good advice of you know, making sure you choose your friends wisely, about how to be careful with your words, make sure you work hard like the ant. Is that famous section in Proverbs 6. But it is, of course, like any book in the Bible, trying to teach us about God's character and what he wants from us. So we look at some of these verses here. I'll just read them off the screen. Proverbs 16:5. And I think all of these, it's only a section of the verse. I'm not quoting the entire one here. But Proverbs 16:5, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. That's a much more spiritual, weighty matter, not just, you know, make sure you save money. Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker. So, you know, considering, again, it's not exactly practical advice. It's really much weightier than that, right? That you need to consider, your fellow man as equally human and in the image of God, not just someone to, take advantage of. And then Proverbs 21:3, the New American Standard, to do righteousness and justice, is desired by the Lord more than sacrifice, which, kind of heard that before from, what is it, Samuel rebuking Saul, I think, but, or similar idea, again, much weightier, idea there. All right. So that was very fast. I'm sorry if you're taking notes and I went through that. But it is a pretty straightforward book, I believe. Again, I'm sure there's depth to it that I am not aware of, that I will probably learn in time, I hope. But to me, I think it is pretty straightforward. book about wisdom, just those direct statements and ideas. Even the poems, I think, are still pretty simple to follow here. And you've got those scenes of father teaching son and going toward Lady Wisdom and away from the Forbidden Woman. So, all right. We'll spend more time on 1 Kings chapter 3. So if you want to turn there, First Kings 3, and I'll go ahead and get my marker there in case I lose my spot. So there's sort of two stories here. They're very much related, though. One is the first half where, you know, God comes to Solomon and says, "What do you want?" And he gives him wisdom. And the second half is where he applies that wisdom to these two women arguing about a child. So, alright, so the summary, really pretty straightforward. Solomon asks for wisdom and gets it in abundance. Of course, he gets much more than that, right? He gets riches as well as just the wisdom. And really, it seems he asks simply for wisdom to govern well. It seems to be his main concern, but God gives him, it seems, all sorts of wisdom beyond that. So very much gracious in what God gave him, gracious to even allow him to ask. So we're gonna go back to this idea a lot, but why the story is special is not just that Solomon is the picture of wisdom, but also he seems to be quite the opposite at times as well. So, you know, on the good side, he had the wisdom to ask for wisdom. That takes, you know, some good character there just to even ask for that. But then, like I say, we'll drill down on this a bit, but the first four verses, I believe, are really, you know, have some red flags. That you can tell if you know a later part of him in chapter 11. It's like, oh, that sounds like what he's about to do and get in trouble for later. And so you've already got hints of that, where he's exercising wisdom and poor judgment, if not yet sin. So main characters, of course, the Lord comes to him in a dream. I don't usually put the Lord as the main character in these stories because he's always there. Solomon being the most main character of all. He's a king. He's pretty new to it. And asks for wisdom. And then there's the two women who are arguing over the living child. There's, you know, one mentioned in the story that we don't really see. Of course, that had unfortunately passed away before the story begins. But I'll, as usual, leave the outline up on the board, on the screen there, and we'll just go ahead and read. So 1 Kings chapter 3. So King James here, and Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Other translations will say like a marriage alliance. But anyway, because he marries his daughter is what it'll say in a few seconds here. So anyway, and Solomon made affinity with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter and brought her into the city of David until he had made an end of building his own house and the house of the Lord. And the wall of Jerusalem round about. Only the people sacrificed in high places, because there was no house built under the name of the Lord until those days. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar. In Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." Verse 6. And Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walk before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee, and thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this thy so great a people? And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days. And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem, and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and offered up burnt offerings, and offered peace offerings, and made a feast to all his servants. Verse 16, then came there two women that were harlots unto the king, and stood before him. And the one woman said, O my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after that I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. In other words, there's no witnesses. 19, and this woman's child died in the night because she overlaid it. And she arose at midnight and took my son from beside me while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom. Horrifying thought. 21, and when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. But when I had considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son, which I did bear. And the other woman said, nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son. And this said, no, but the dead is thy son, and the living is my son. Thus they spake before the king. Then said the king, the one saith, this is my son that liveth, and thy son is the dead. And the other saith, nay, but thy son is the dead, and my son is the living. And the king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king. And the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, O my lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged. And they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. So, very classic story of how to settle a matter with no witnesses there. So, the thing I alluded to earlier, the first four verses have all these red flags of what Solomon's doing. So first, we read in verse 1 that he marries an Egyptian woman. This is not forbidden. There were many... we'll go ahead and we'll try to turn to these. Not that long list of scriptures at the end, but most of these other ones. we'll try to turn to these. So Deuteronomy 7. Nations that the Israelites were forbidden to intermarry with. Deuteronomy 7 and 1 through 4. And in short, it's the land of Canaan. but he names them all. When the Lord thy God, this is Deuteronomy 7, shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. And when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. for they will turn away thy son from following me. Hint, hint. This is why it's a bad idea. They're going to make you not serve the true God. That they may serve other gods, so will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. Not in that list was Egypt. That was not a nation that they were not allowed to marry with. There are some other nations mentioned as trouble, not quite in the same way. So Deuteronomy 23 and verse 3 says, an Ammonite or a Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to their tenth generation. Shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever, because they met you not with bread and water in the way when you came forth out of Egypt, and because they hired against thee Balaam, the son of Beor, of Pethor of Mesopotamia, to curse thee. And you may be thinking, wasn't Ruth a Moabite? Yes, she was. So the understanding is that, you know, because she was a proselyte, she faithfully converted to becoming a believer in the true God, that... you know, that was a different circumstance. We don't read that of Solomon's wife, that he married this Pharaoh's daughter, and then she served the Lord all the days of her life. There's no footnote for that. It's a little conspicuous. It's not proof, but it's a little odd that it's not mentioned. all right, so I mentioned that verse in Deuteronomy 23 to kind of steer you toward Nehemiah. So I don't think we read this when we read Nehemiah. I kind of briefly hinted at it, but this is a good time to read it now. Nehemiah 13, 23 to 27. Sorry. So they had had a problem with intermarriage before, and then Nehemiah sees something like this again. He says, in those days also I saw Jews that had married wives of Ashdod and of Ammon and of Moab. Those last two were nations we just read about. And their children spake half in the speak of Ashdod and could not speak the Jews' language, but according to the language of each people. And I contended with them and cursed them and smote certain of them and plucked off their hair. I know I mentioned that one because that one stands out. And made them swear by God, saying, you shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take their daughters unto your sons or for yourselves. This is an interesting connection. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations was there no king like him who was beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, even him did outlandish women cause to sin. so, again, it's not... he's referring more to the later marriages in chapter 11 of 1 Kings. But, you know... Again, I think Nehemiah sees sort of the writing on the wall, right, of the problem with these marriages to foreign women without them being converted to Judaism, if you will. okay, so there's the first red flag. Another one, going back to 1 Kings 3, is the sacrificing of the high places. Again, not outright forbidden. But I'm going to clarify that. So give them the benefit of the doubt here. There was a time that the altar itself, the rightful altar to sacrifice on, you know, the holy blessed altar, was on a high place. So I'm going to read that. 2 Chronicles 1 through 13. I probably won't read all of it, but 2 Chronicles 1. Three through 13. So verse 3, Solomon was instructed for building the house of God. I'm on the wrong chapter. I knew that was off. Okay. I'm in chapter 3. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be in chapter 1, verse 3. It's funny because it related. All right. So Solomon and all the congregation with him went to the high place that was at Gibeon, for there was the tabernacle of the congregation of God, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, had made in the wilderness. So at the time, the tabernacle was still there on this place called the high place. Verse 4, but the ark of God had David brought up from Kirjath Jearim to the place where David had prepared for it, for he had pitched a tent for it at Jerusalem. I myself always remember all the place names, but just catch the fact that Jerusalem is a different city than Gibeon. Okay. So isn't it odd that the Ark of the Covenant is in a different place than the tabernacle? The Ark's supposed to be in the tabernacle. I don't know if that itself is a problem. I would think so. It seems like it's claiming they did this because they were, going to build the temple down in Jerusalem. And so they're just kind of like getting things staged. How long does it take to move an ark, though? I mean, did you have to do that ahead of time? And what were they doing for worship all those years while these things were split? Because it seems to carry all the way into Solomon's time. So I don't know. Anyway, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And so it goes on, and then you get Second Chronicles here, a short recap of this story that we just read about Solomon asked for wisdom. And it goes on to recap that. And then verse 13, then Solomon came from his journey, this is after the wisdom story, to the high place that was at Gibeon to Jerusalem, from before the tabernacle of the congregation and reigned over Israel. So it really is tied together. This high place that he went to does seem to be where the rightful place of worship was. Okay. Should we give him a pass for that? Now, verse 2, though, back in 1 Kings 3, the people sacrificed in high places. When that's plural, that's a problem. There's only one rightful altar at this time in their history. How can you be going to high places? So that's a problem. You also notice the same idea. If you see when it talks about kings that have gone off the rails, it'll talk about the altars that they set up. If it mentions an altar, that's usually okay. That's the good altar. When it mentions altars with an S on the end, there's trouble. So again, there's a hint. And then verse 3 kind of hints at this also, right? Solomon loved the Lord, walked in the statutes of David, but he sacrificed and burnt incense in high places. So this is not a compliment, right? Because it's like, why not just leave it at Solomon loved the Lord, the end, right? There's again another hint. He's doing something questionable. Maybe not technically wrong yet, but it seems like he's very much headed that way. All right, so for time, I'll skip the other references. 2 Kings 17 has a good kind of summary of how the nation of Israel, like the northern tribes, sinned because they worshipped on high places. And then the good kings of Judah, they weren't all good, but the ones that were good, are usually said they did it great and they walked in the ways of David, but they didn't get around to removing the high places. So that was something they should have done, whereas Hezekiah did, and he's complimented for that. Okay, beat that horse to death. 1 Kings 11. I want to read this briefly. This is the summary of everything that went downhill for Solomon. So 1 Kings 11, starting verse 1. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians and Hittites of nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for ye shall, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. So they did indeed turn him away. Verse 3, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as was the heart of David his father. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and went not fully after the Lord, as did David his father. Then did Solomon build an high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, in the hill that is before Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the children of Ammon. And likewise did he for all his strange wives, which burnt incense and sacrificed unto their gods. Sorry, I think I was supposed to stop earlier. No, well, verse 9, that's right. And just as a summary, verse 9, and the Lord was angry with Solomon, in case you couldn't tell, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel, which had appeared unto him twice. And it goes on to another story there, but so here you see the things combined toward the end of his life. He ended up going after many more foreign women, ones that were expressly forbidden to marry, and very much sacrificed or created high places to sacrifice to these foreign gods. So now we know for sure this was wrong. Was it wrong at the beginning in chapter 3? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say no, but I can't say yes either, but boy, it sure is a red flag, isn't it? So, but, you know, to wrap up, he was still doing the right thing. He still was right to ask for wisdom. It's kind of ironic that someone who had these lapses in judgment was wise enough to seek out wisdom. But it's not the wisdom that made him fall, right? It was these poor choices. And it is funny because, you know, we kind of been touching on that in our study in Ecclesiastes, how he had wisdom, but, you know, kind of sees how it's, you could say it failed him, but it didn't fail him, right? It's he failed wisdom. So I just picked one example of that, Ecclesiastes 7, 25 to 26. And he says, I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and the reason of things and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. So I feel that kind of, you know, ties these things together, right? He tried to find wisdom, but the thing that was his downfall was being lured by these women. So wisdom was there, but he still followed foolish decisions. So again, recap if you're taking notes. pretty well-known story of Solomon asking for wisdom, but as we talked about, making some poor choices along the way. So we'll go ahead and read Proverbs 8. Proverbs 8, and we'll finish there. And as I said, you'll see this picture of wisdom being presented as a woman and as a person speaking to people, to us reading it. And we'll close out from there. So, Proverbs 8. And again, we'll read the whole thing. Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? She standeth in the top of high places, by the way, in the places of paths. She cries at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in of the doors. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things, for my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to him, to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy in the evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me princes rule, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness, in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth, while as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him as one brought up with him. Yeah, that's in italics, and I would not put the with him there myself. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the habitable part of his earth, and my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me, findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord. But he that sinneth against me, wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. So we'll end there. Of course, it's a call to us today to seek the good paths and to seek wisdom. If there's any here this morning that wish to obey the call of the gospel and live in paths of righteousness and turn away from that which is evil, as we read, then this is a good time to come forward as we stand and sing the song of invitation.